if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 345. This is our 2025 Texas Children's Houston Open and Hero Indian Open tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting previews for both events. We've got Memorial Park strokes gained rankings for the Houston Open. Detailed form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for all of the golf action this week. Our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. On X, you can reach Barry at Good Talk Golf, Paul at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We are on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. When you subscribe, by the way, listeners, make sure that your notifications are switched on. We are very, very close to the Masters. So get the notification switched on. You will receive the podcast as soon as it's released. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is entitled, Chaps, Factual, Insightful and Intelligent. Great podcast. Some of the best information online for upcoming tournaments. They surprisingly get it wrong 98% of the time, but it's an excellent, relaxed listen that helps pick the ones not to bet. Jokes aside, it's a must listen if you're betting on golf. That's from Touch My Touch, and Touch My Touch is in the UK. Thank you, Touch, for your five-star review.
That's fantastic. That's so right. So good.
Very right.
Yeah.
Absolutely
right. Yeah. No, you can't argue, can you? Ultimately, it's about picking the players within that massive field on both sides of the Atlantic each week, yeah. And you're going to be wrong more than you're going to be right. But we occasionally get the odd one or two right, don't we?
Stats don't lie, lads. We know it. You know, so 98% seems like a really generous percentage.
Well, only one out of 156 or whatever the fielders can win each week. So. Yeah.
If you could send in some more Apple five-star reviews, you are very, very likely to get read out across our Masters Research or Masters Tips podcast. So spend a couple of minutes, write some prose, send it in, five stars. We would really, really appreciate it. Right, okay. If you're listening to this podcast on YouTube, we would love to hit 150 likes this week. Plus, with the Masters Research podcast just around the corner, subscribe to the channel. Right, let's talk about last week, chaps. Where should we start? I've got a lot written down here, a lot of conversation points. But Go on, Barry.
I was going to say, in the spirit of getting things wrong, I broke Jake Knapp. I jumped in late in the podcast. It was like a panic FOMO bet. And I just need to apologize to Jake Knapp and everybody else who followed that in. I don't know. That's it. That's all I have to say. I'm sorry, Jake.
I think Jake just wanted to leave Florida and get to Texas as soon as possible.
Could be.
He managed
it. It looked that way. I mean, we watch a lot of golf, but that swing in the late holes on Sunday with JT three ahead and Victor standing over, it looked like a sort of 12, 14 foot putt for birdie. It looked quite unlikely. At that point, I just thought it was done. And the crowd were behind JT, was whooping, he was hollering, you know, you could just see he was feeling it. I thought the tournament was done. And then Hovland holds it, and he's following putts in like Jack Nicklaus. You could see he was, you know, Hovland was like, he was into this. And then it was the drive on 16 that seemed to go, I don't know. It was a good 30 yards to the left at 16. And all of a sudden, the whole momentum of that Valspar Championship turned on a sixpence. What were your thoughts? I know you weren't actually watching it, Barry, but what were your thoughts, Paul, when you were sitting watching all this, you know, kicking off?
Yeah, it looked for all of the world as if JT had the momentum, and this is the game, isn't it? It can swing, it can change so quickly and so dramatically. I don't know what price JT was walking off the 15th, wasn't it, where he momentarily got that three-shot lead, but he must have been super short. But yeah, fair play to Hovland. You know, coming into that event, what was he, 50-1, I think he was, pre-event? Wrong side of the draw as well. So I saw some tickets that were placed late on Wednesday or early Thursday when, you know, there was all of this talk of the draw bias being really dramatic and potentially up to four strokes, I saw quoted. Didn't really manifest like that in the end.
Can I stop you there, Paul?
Yeah, go on.
Just to be factually correct, there was a draw bias. In the end, it was half a stroke.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nowhere near as dramatic as was touted.
Well, before the event, the other half might as well not turned up for the tournament, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Hovland and JT were both in the wrong side of the draw.
As I say, their prices drifted dramatically. Then, as I say, 80-1 I saw on Hovland before the start of the event, but. You know, he was a tough one to back anyway. You'd have done well to have chosen to back him even at 50s with a flat draw, more potential for a flat draw bias. But yeah,
friendless.
Really good. Thing is, his game. I don't think his game was really anywhere near as good as it can be. Certainly from off the tee, there's still a lot of work to do. But clearly, good enough to go and win a tournament like that, and. You know, that's going to do him the world of good, I expect, moving forward. Not going to do JT.
I'm taking no glory here. I'm taking no glory here, but I'm sure I said a couple of weeks ago on one of his outings, he was eighth for tee to green and he was last for strokes gained putting.
Mm.
So something was bubbling, but I think he was pretty friendless before that event. Completely friendless. No, I don't think many were backing him.
It makes you wonder.
We've seen this a few times this season, haven't we? I mean, Rory won the Players and no one was backing him the week before.
Well, that was because his price was short, you know. And the Players is an extreme event where you can be miscutted so fast without even thinking. So, that, you know, the approach to betting that is a bit different from a regular event. But I wondered if the thing with Victor was the mental side of things rather than the... just to physically hitting the ball. He seems like one that needs to be more, you know, maybe more, a little bit more than others. Like the head needs to be in a happier space. And maybe it just wasn't in sync or matching with what he was seeing come out of his golf swing. But he managed to wrap his head around it. So, like, I think we all knew the talent was there and it was going to happen. But man, he really seemed to turn that around quickly. Or did we just not pay attention close enough?
No, there was very little sign, Barry. I mean, missing cuts for fun, statistically not great. And ultimately, you know, as Steve said, the putting on the stats you quoted there was pretty poor, but he putted well, particularly on Sunday.
Mm.
These things can turn around really quite quickly, and you've got a player of his quality, undoubted quality, who can, you know, wrap his head around that and get himself back in the winner's circle.
Steve, how would you categorize him now? Like this is not a guy who just telegraphs his wins from a few events out. Like could he just now pop up and win at any given week with very little warning signs?
Yeah, it's interesting actually. I'm just looking at his record within my database here, and he's only ever once won off a top 10 performance the outing before, and that was when he won the Tour Championship the year that clearly he won the FedEx Cup, and he'd actually won the BMW and then won the Tour Champ. So you could argue, I mean, was that a genuine... Anyway, I'm not going down that rabbit hole, but building up to wins, I'm seeing, from a strokes gain total perspective, 79th, 15th, 18th, 16th, 13th, 1st, this time 115th. So from a strokes gain total perspective, he's 115th at the Players, drives up to Tampa, wins at 50-1. And as Paul said, I expect he was closer to 60s on some books as of Thursday morning when they were turning
80-1 I saw.
80?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's some big drifts.
I always, you know, I religiously on price, it's just the Monday morning first show price, but 80-1 is incredible. That's just mad. If you'd have said middle of last year even that you were going to get an 80-1 win on Victor Hovland in March in 2025, you'd just say that's just never going to happen. It won't happen. Can't happen.
Yeah. Wow. Was he lost an arm?
The only statistic that gave away that something was in the pipeline was the fact that on my strokes gained rankings for 8 weeks, he was fourth in the field last week for approach. Everything else, especially putting, he was ranking at a 77th in the field for putting over the previous 8 weeks. Do you think he's actually now a decent bet for the Masters, chaps?
He could honestly be. I mean, do you kind of just tear up the book a little bit about how quickly somebody can come back from what we would class as the doldrums? I was genuinely worried we could see this stretch out for the whole season, and you know he might even risk missing the Ryder Cup because the game can get to you like that. But I mean, just problem seems to be solved. Let's go.
Yeah, huge for him.
I actually put out my research piece last week. Paul published it, I think it was Wednesday of last week. Have a read. I will actually, there is a link in the description box, listeners. Give it a good thorough read through. Hot form and Masters winners go hand in hand. That's all I'll say. And winning your previous outing, I mean, that's pretty hot form, isn't it?
Not bad.
I think we saw, was it Scheffler won the world match play? I don't know. There's something in there. I mean, immediate winners can win at Augusta. There's no doubt about that. I'm just trying to see what his record is like at Augusta National. Is there any top 10s in there that break out? 32nd, 21st, 27th. 2023, he was 7th. And going into Sunday, he was 3rd. And then last year, he missed the cut when playing absolutely abysmally. So 2 years ago, he was right on the pace. Third position heading into Sunday.
Yeah,
I can hear Cogs whirring.
Yeah, I know. So, well, I suppose the other one, the only thing you'd reservation I'd have is his short game around Augusta. Doesn't quite have the surgical touch that some others do out there on tour.
Pre-pod, you were mentioning Xander. Do you want to quickly go into that for 30 seconds?
Well, that was interesting. I saw a tweet saying it was his best strokes gained tee to green performance in his career at Copperhead. And so I popped that into the golf betting system WhatsApp, and Steve then comes back with a bit of context and says, yeah, but that it was 129th or something like that in the field for strokes gained off the tee. So his strokes gained approach performance must have been about, you know, 37 strokes for the week based on that. I kind of had Xander written off for another little while longer after a rib injury before he was getting back to something. But that's ominous that he's got the approach game into shape. And somebody with his determination and focus, I'd say he's got a very good chance of getting that driver back in under wraps within the next couple of weeks. So I was kind of hoping Xander wouldn't be a factor because I wasn't going to back him based on the injury. But he was more than a nuisance last year. when it came to the majors, winning two. So now I think he's a factor, and that's going to be something that distracts from the guys I'm backing. So yeah, what do you guys think? Do you think he's now there and worthy of consideration for a bet?
I don't think you can ignore him. The rib injuries are notoriously difficult, and they can linger a long time, or they can resurface. Mm. And yeah, the price of Xander always grates with me, because even with a lingering injury and not the best of form, he's not going to go off any more than 22 to 1, which is your standard kind of Xander pre-major champion price.
Can I have a guess? He's 20 to 1 right now.
Yeah.
On the anti-post market.
That's the price we used to get on Xander before he won two majors.
Yeah.
So now we're just banking on, if you're backing him, you're banking on that rib injury being sorted.
Yeah.
That is a fair comment. I'm just looking actually at the odds that he was chalked up at the Century at the start of this season. Bearing in mind, Scheffler didn't play that because of his hand injury. Xander for the Century was being quoted at 5 to 1 to win that tournament. Colin Morikawa 10 to 1. So actually, with the drift, 20 to 1 seems quite a fair price on Xander.
That's annoyingly tempting now.
To end of last year, start of this year, before the rib injury, it was basically the big three in the market, and he was clearly the third man of the big three. That shows you he has drifted on price. But yes, he always goes off at majors at 20 to 1, doesn't he? Really,
I'm like, if he's 20 to 1 and I can get 8 places, I think I'm just adding that. It's nuts. I don't, if that guy's still healthy in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I can see some logic in that. I'm just going to go through a few stats about the Houston Open. We're tight on time this week, as ever. I was going to highlight Ben Ahn. If people talk to me about the post-it note of doom, Ben Ahn is a primary member of that. He was second after 36 holes at the Copperhead course. Things were rosy. But, of course, he then collapsed like a cheap shoot, or folded like a cheap suit, when in contention. 72-71. He finally finished 16th. That's why Ben Ahn is on my post-it note of doom. Hovland strokes gained metrics. Bearing in mind, we were talking all last week, the split between tee to green and putting at Copperhead being so level, it was incredible. You listen to this, chaps. Hovland gained 6.266 strokes from tee to green. He trumped that, though, on the putting surfaces. 7.353 strokes gained putting to win that tournament. That was 47% strokes gained tee to green, 53% with the putter. And don't forget, prior to that, the four previous champions, the split was 53 tee to green, 47 with the putter. So next year, when we look at this, it's literally going to be a 50-50 split at the the Valspar. 50% tee to green, 50% putting. Though those kind of metrics are rarely seen on the PGA Tour. So just shows you, you've got to have a red hot putter at the Valspar. Just going to throw this in there as well. In more golf news, we've got three more players that have qualified for the 153rd Open at Royal Portrush last week. They finished in the top three in Macau. Carlos Ortiz, our old friend, Patrick Reed, and another friend, I've landed on this guy before, actually at the event that we're tipping up this week, Jason Kokrag. They are the three that qualified for the Open at Portrush. Paul was glad to hear that Sergio Garcia was fourth and failed to qualify for the Open. Of course, there will be Open qualification and other tournaments that he can qualify via.
Is that Sergio Voodoo? The Sergio Voodoo doll working, Paul, is it? Missed a three-footer to
worked.
Get it.
Yeah, it worked well.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And Patrick Reed's in.
Reed's in, yeah. Fringy 100 in the world rankings, bearing in mind he barely plays any world ranking events. Paul, yeah. Talk us through Richard Mansell's first victory in 45 seconds on the DP World Tour, please, last week.
Yeah, well, nice to see him getting across the line, I guess. Again, not many people on him by the looks of it. 50 to 1 or thereabouts pre-event, coming in with a little bit of form. I said in the pod, we'd need a fast starter and a good driver, and he is both of those. You know, generally in the past has been a decent starter and he's good from off the tee, but you know, he's had a good few attempts and a good few contending performances and not got over the line before, but it all went his way on Sunday, so it's a fair play to him. Shortened event in the end, as we suspected pre-event, so Thursday was washed out. And to be fair, they did an incredible job, didn't they, of getting the course playable. It was in a right state with the amount of water.
54 holes was a major effort, considering that weather.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I was on Haotong Lee. He opened 6-under, one off the lead. Really flat Saturday, and then finished in that betting no man's land, a tie for 9th when you got him back to 8 places. that was rather frustrating. But yeah, we move on.
Matt Fitzpatrick has split with Billy Foster. The Guardian are reporting. All is not well in the Matt Fitzpatrick camp. That's plain and obvious. Ryder Cup qualification as of after last week's events. Scheffler, Xander, Morikawa, Henley, DeChambeau. JJ Spawn, remember, is an automatic qualifier as it stands. McNeely, Thomas, Cantlay, Glover. Another good performance last week from Lucas. Billy Horschel jumps up to 11. Tony Finau clinging on in 12th. In the European team, McIlroy, Hatton, Rasmus Højgaard, Shane Lowry, Ludvig Åberg, Thomas Dietrich, automatics. Niklas Norgaard, Matt Wallace, Tommy Fleetwood, Laurie Canter, Paul Waring, Robert McIntyre. We are now, of course, at the end of March. So things are trucking a little bit, but there's plenty of time still to go.
Who's your money on right now?
For
the Ryder Cup, I'm backing like Europe or USA for a win. Like, I'm backing Europe right now. Things are very, very rosy.
I think we've peaked too early. And these tournaments early on in the year do tend to really suit European golfers. Lots of wind, firmer Florida conditions, blah, 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 blah.
What's New York in September going to be like?
It's going to be really warm. I would have thought that the New York State Department Fire Brigade will have been on the course for 13 consecutive days before the tournament. There will be no rough. And it will be like throwing darts around a very long golf course.
There's a chance you could have a week of European weather there that time of year. I agree. I think the early peaking of the Europeans is amazing, but also a little bit scary because you know how it can flip in the other direction. So right now it feels good.
I don't think we should be intimidated, though. I think we're going to have a very strong team.
No.
Don't forget, we didn't read out the name John Rahm there for Europe. He's going to play. Fact.
Sepp Straka is outside.
He's going to play. Fact.
Yeah. Hovland, Straka.
Yeah, Hovland isn't in the team as such. He's definitely going to get in there. He'll get a pick, whatever. Straka, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Top 20 in the world. Yeah, you'd think he should be there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, winner on the PGA Tour. Yeah.
Only 6 months away.
Yeah. It's just those fringy players, isn't it? You know, like I said, Billy Foster, the split with Matt Fitzpatrick. Matt has to find something desperately. He needs to find some form, something.
He needs to win twice to be on the team for me.
We'd have been saying exactly the same about Victor Hovland 7 days ago, though. So golf changes very quickly. That is the truth of it. Right, let's talk Houston Open, shall we?
We should just mention Davis Riley before we move on, I think.
Oh, of course. Sorry. You know, it's such a busy show, and it's been. I completely forgot. Now, this is typical, isn't it? I completely forgot. It was literally the community bet of the week. There were so many people on Davis Riley to win that tournament last week. And it was excruciating to watch on Sunday. Absolutely excruciating. He had no chance of winning because the bloke couldn't putt. So him winning was never in my mind because he couldn't win because his putting was negative. And as we went through, you had to have a positive putter. But that top eight, he was there or thereabouts the whole way through. It was being held together by sticks, matches and sellotape, but somehow he was clinging on.
He lost.
Can you believe it? He was first for strokes going tee to green last week.
How was he?
Davis Riley.
That's insane, right?
Most of that was around the green. He had the magic beans, chaps. He was literally chipping in every sixth or seventh hole. It was great to be on board a player that actually had magic beans for the week. It never happens.
What is up with that golf course? Because round one, he lost 2.5 strokes off the tee. And round four, he lost over 2.5 strokes off the tee alone. And he's still number one tee to green for the week, you said?
Yeah.
Insane.
He was like Seve round the greens, Barry.
But then he
apart from 17, when he did that flop shot, it went 12-foot pass and he was going to miss the putt for the par. But everything else was fantastic, Davis Riley.
175-1, full place.
175-1. I know.
Yeah, it's nice when it comes together, isn't it? And he missed some really short parts as well. Was it Friday round where he'd finished missing a two-footer and then a four-footer? And you're like...
Paul, he made 4 3 putts on Friday. And the guy was only 3 off the lead.
Yeah. Oh, no. It could have been clear.
When it was all totted up.
You know what happened? His mates just messaged him and said, the entire golf gambling community is on you this week. Don't mess it up.
He did look pale in the face, didn't he?
It was great ammunition for this week and for the Masters. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot. He's going to be very, very popular this week because we know with... He is a one-trick pony, Davis Riley. It's all southern United States golf courses, Bermuda. This course does suit. But if he drives like he drove last week, it's not going to happen. We are talking about Memorial Park Golf Course, Houston, Texas. A John Brademus 1935 design with a Tom Doak renovation in 2019. That renovation included Brooks Koepka. And this golf course is very, very unique. Very unique. Only 23 bunkers on the whole golf course. And I've read some contents around this. Koepka basically said, tour pros, bunkers, blah, you know, that isn't how you create difficulty. How you create difficulty on a golf course are, you're going to love this, Barry, releasing greens, raised greens, yeah, plenty of undulation on those greens, yeah, and runoff areas around them. And that's exactly what you get here at Memorial Park. I wouldn't say it's Augusta-like, because clearly it isn't. There's no undulation on this golf course. It's pan flat. But when you look at the way they set the golf course up, listen to this. It's only got 1.25 inches of Bermuda overseeded perennial ryegrass this week. Does that remind you of anywhere in terms of the first cut? So no rough this week. Fast greens... undulating greens, no rough around the greens. That's what you're dealing with. And it's a long golf course. They've extended it as well for this. They've added another 40 yards from last year. They've added 40 yards to the par 5 16th, which is now a 616-yard par 5. It's a par 5 all in par 70 all in name. It actually features 5 par 3s and 3 par 5s. So it isn't your standard 70 with the 2 5s. But it's a great testing golf course. I love it. Minus 12 won here last year. That was Stephen Jaeger. Tony Finau. We were on board in 2021. Jason Kokrag. I think he was 70 or 66, something like that, from memory.
Yeah, remember.
Carlos Ortiz, we've already mentioned these two on the pod. He won here on course debut in 2020. Anything before that is a completely different golf course. That was one they used to play at Redstone. So 13 under, 10 under, 16 under, 12 under. It's not the easiest of tests. It's a difficult test. A very difficult test. I'm looking for my strokes gain sheet, and typically, have I left it upstairs? No, it's here. These numbers are pretty funky as well, chaps. Last four winners, well, there's only been four on this golf course. 12% of the winning total strokes gained off the tee, 29 on approach, 10% around the greens. That would be a lot more as well, but Kokrag won, almost losing four strokes around the green. All of the others have been 5.7, 1.15 and 3.17. So, you know, the Davis-Riley effect from last week is in effect this week. If you've got magic beans, this golf course suits. I think you're going to notice there are players that have contended around here like Mackenzie Hughes, so that gives it all away. Tee to green, 51%. Strokes gained putting, chaps. We're back in the same window as last week, 49%. So again, team no putt is not in effect this week. You've got to be gaining a minimum of 1.5 strokes per round with the putter on these mini Verde Bermuda grass overseeded with Poa Trivialis greens. Can I just say, this golf course and its agronomy is the perfect playground for one Scotty Scheffler. If he was going to design a golf course, this would probably be it in terms of just about everything, including the grass. One thing that Scotty does struggle with, though, and he's struggling with this year, is he can't putt. I know we're short on time. Is there anything else you'd want to know from me before we move forward in terms of our selections? It's a long testing golf course, and I've got to say, the weather forecast is a complete and utter mess for Thursday and Friday. I'm just looking at it now. There's rain, there's wind, there's, even better, Friday afternoon, thunderstorms, 80% chance.
Mm. Bit of disruption.
So, everyone now will be desperately trying to work out what side of the draw they need to be on, and that hasn't worked very well recently. It looks to me as if play will get suspended Friday afternoon. So there could be something in here that says early, late starters, because you'd be playing Saturday on a golf course that's at least not raining and very soft. There is typically 20 mile an hour winds across the whole forecast, pretty much.
Yeah,
that's your typical Texas winds.
Yeah.
Let's be frank, guys. This is going to be tough this week.
Yeah. Should be a good test, and that's a good test ahead of Augusta in a couple of weeks' time. Get the players tuned up and into the right kind of mindset. So, somewhere around 10, 12 under par as a winning total this week would be perfect for that, I think.
All I will say is, if you look at Stefan Jaeger, Tony Finau, Jason Kokrag, even Carlos Ortiz, they could all get it out there. I mean, I'm seeing Stefan Jaeger 13th for driving distance, all drives before he won this last year. Finau top 30. Kokrag was top 30. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but basically top 30 prior up to the Tour Championship before he won this. So I think length off the tee is a huge advantage around here. And just to put that into some context, last year, if you look at Finau, Taylor Moore, Alejandro Tosti, do you like that one? Thomas Dietrich and Scotty Scheffler, each one of those players were in the top 60 for driving distance, all drives, in the build-up to this tournament on the PGA Tour statistics. I think driving power and consistent length off the tee does separate you around here. Or you've got to be an absolute ball-striking demon. Fairways and greens. And somebody, of course, needs to catch light with the putter. Which is always... I mean, if you want the statistic that's the most difficult to prejudge, it's who's... Who, did anyone see Victor Hovland gaining 9 strokes with the putter last week?
No. Maybe Sorry, it was 7. I don't think Victor did.
No.
Right, I have gone for... I'm not going to work in reverse because it just complicates things. Where are your prices that you're coming in at, chaps?
One short and 2 triple digits.
Nice. Darren? I've got 1 short as well.
When you say short, how short?
33. Wait, I got my short actually. Yeah, short relative at 40-1. I picked him up at.
Sure. What that's mid price, Barry.
Okay. It's short for me. It's relative, you know.
Can we have a guess? I reckon you've gone for Min Woo Lee, Barry.
No, I don't know. I ended up going for Siwoo Kim. There was just
interesting
a confluence of decent form without being spectacular. Last 5 events are 12th, 21st, 24th, 19th, 38th. He's gone 35th and 17th here progressively the last 2 years. Maybe he gets out of this funk of not getting into the places this week. A little under the radar. And so 40-1 went, yeah, okay. And it kind of matches a little bit. It's only a couple of weeks after the biorhythm of his players win. So that was another thing that kind of got in my head.
Four wins on the PGA Tour, Siwoo Kim. We trot this out. For new listeners, we trot this out all the time. 4 wins on the PGA Tour, all 4 on Bermuda grass. Paul, what's your short price in terms of price?
I'm going to back Rory. And the reason for that is that I don't think he should be twice the price of Scottie Scheffler with books this week. I just simply don't agree that that's the right market. I don't think I don't see there's that much of a gulf between the two. I mean, yes, Scheffler's finished runner-up. He's finished runner-up twice, I think, hasn't he? Rory's making his debut on this course, but Rory's coming into this with 3 wins in his last 6. Scheffler's cut a really frustrated figure of late. I think in terms of the way the course sets up, it should be good for Rory. I think he should be keen, or will be keen, to sharpen his strokes going off the tee game right now before Augusta. That's the only part in the last couple of outings that hasn't been absolutely tip top. The rest of his games look really good and putting well. I think this will be his final sharpening exercise before going to Augusta National. I think he's got every chance of winning it. Certainly at that kind of price, you're looking at 7-1. I'm going to hold on. I haven't backed him right now. I am going to back him. I'm going to hold on and see where his price gets to over the next day or two. There doesn't seem to be a great deal of love for either him or Scotty, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of drift on both of them again. So, yes, he is the one that I'm going to back at the top.
6.12, 8.68, 7.93, 6.40. Those are the strokes gained putting numbers of the 4 champions here. It doesn't scream Scottie Scheffler to me.
Mm.
And I said in my commentary, he came here last year. I know I put £10 on him at 3-1 to win. So clearly that brings every player to his knees. But he had just won the Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Players' Championship in consecutive outings. He was at the peak of his powers, the very peak of his powers, and he couldn't win this. And you know why? Because he couldn't putt. He was kind of neutral on the putting. And that isn't good. This golf course separates with short game. It's a very, very untypical PGA Tour track. It's short game that separates. Or methodical tee to green. I tell you who I went for. And if you say to me that players of a Matt Fitzpatrick are struggling or looking to struggle to qualify for the Ryder Cup team, I reckon Aaron Rye's got a decent shout this year. He seems to have stepped up to the mark for me. He seems to have jumped a level. Top 20 in the world, would that be right? I'm thinking he's kind of on the fringes, or he's definitely top 30.
Yeah, he's in that bracket.
If Aaron Rye is to qualify for the Team Europe Ryder Cup team, he needs to take out one of these weaker events on the PGA Tour. A Rocket Mortgage Classic, a Houston Open, something of this ilk. And wherever I looked, course correlation, statistics, course history, strokes gained on this course, whatever I looked at, Aaron Rye was literally staring me in the face. And in the end, I'm thinking, well, you need to be a bomber to win here. You need to be a bomber to win here. You need to be a bomber to win here. Aaron Rye can't win. Need to be a bomber here. In the end, I just relented. I remember a few weeks ago in Mexico, had to be a bomber to win there, didn't you? Had to be a bomber. Aldridge, Potgieter, all of this stuff. Brian Campbell was the shortest man in the field and won on a bomber's golf course. So I'm with Aaron Rye. 2.5 points each way, 22-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. Rye just really navigates beautifully around here. 19th, 7th and 7th. He's playing really good golf. And when we managed to snare him at the Wyndham last year, he was putting really well. He's in exactly the same mould as he was then. That, again, is Sedgefield Country Club's another one of these tracks. Literally 50% tee to green, 50% putting. Aaron Rye run around there. So I'm on Rye, 22-1 with Bet365. I back up Paul. I was listening to Rick Gaiman, fantastic videos that he puts out on YouTube. Rick Gaiman was quoting that if you took the last 30 rounds, Rory McIlroy now is by far number one golfer on the planet. Scheffler number two, but I think he's over like, it's almost three quarters of a stroke per round behind Rory right now.
That makes sense. Passes the eye test anyway. I can't understand why Rory's doubled the odds of Scotty this week.
Yeah. So I think Paul's train of thought is very, very accurate. Mm. Right, my next selections are 60-1, 75-1, and 75-1. How do they chime in with yours, chaps?
Steve Bamford, this is a different man this week. You're fishing in our waters,
well, one of them,
Steve.
Can I tempt you, Barry, with Jake Knapp?
Go on, tell me why.
Long. If you look at some courses here, where does Tony Finau play well at? Well,
anywhere without water, according to you.
He's not bad at Torrey Pines, is he? Tony Finau.
No.
He's not bad at Detroit Golf Club, where he's won the Rocket Mortgage. There's a number of tracks that Tony Finau and Jake Knapp. What about Mexico Open, where he's finished second and first at Vedanta? Look at Jake Knapp. Jake Knapp has played well on Torrey Pines. He was third, and he's also won at the Vedanta. It's the Norman Signature course, isn't it? I just get the feeling with Jake Knapp. Yeah, he had who cares? Stefan Jaeger missed the cut on his outing before winning this. Jake Knapp, for me, long, high ball flight, putting lights out at the moment, yeah? Decent short game. I just get the feeling Knapp could go really, really well this week. And I think from looking at Nosferatu on X, Knapp needs to finish top two to get into the world's top 50. So basically it's win or bust for Jake Knapp this week to get into the Masters. Clearly he'll play Valero next week, but yeah, there's very limited chances for Jake Knapp to get to a Masters invite, be that top 50 in the world, or he's got to win. And in this field, I think Jake Knapp at 75-1 was a good bet. Bet 365, 8 places each way on Jake Knapp. Have I persuaded you on Jake Knapp?
The thing is, that course last week can just dust you off. There's plenty of players that miss cuts in there. It looked a little sloppy. Maybe it's just not his vibe around Copperhead. This does feel much more like his style of course, even though I think he's got the ability to play a variety of styles. So I was supporting him when he was playing well. I need to support him when he was playing down. Well, not, you know, when he was down. So Sure. I was missing a bet anyway, so I think you might have me on board.
Paul?
No, I haven't backed him, no, but I don't think you can put too much on one performance. I mean, this is a guy who shot 59 a few weeks ago. So.
Yeah. He should have won the Cognizant Classic, yeah? He then missed out by about a point to get into the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and then he was top 12. If you want a golf course that isn't Jake Knapp, Barry.
Last week.
Sawgrass? He was 12th.
Yeah. Oh, look, I know. Okay, right. I'm in, Steve.
Right, okay, you're in. Barry will be, you know, when he's three over through five on Thursday, Givings, he'll be straight on the water.
Yeah.
Taylor Moore, 60-1, William Hill, 8 place each way. I don't really need to go into Taylor Moore. He was second here last year. I tipped him up last week for the Valspar. He missed the cut. But he just putts well on Bermuda grass. He's long off the tee. He's a consistent greens and regulation guy. So Taylor Moore for me at 60-1, William Hill 8 each way. And also, I know this sounds crazy, Kevin Yu. I thought it was interesting last week, Kevin Yu. He was literally had the armchair. He was playing with JT. And actually, he didn't really disgrace himself amid the hullabaloo. That must have been one of the first times Kevin Yu's been literally playing with an elite golfer, and that elite golfer is going to win a tournament, and the crowds are there, 7-8 deep, the atmosphere's amazing, go JT! And of course it all turned sour at the end, but Kevin Yu had a great tournament last week, and one thing we learned about Kevin Yu is, tee to green, the bloke's an assassin, long off the tee, he's incredibly straight, high greens in regulation, very good approach play. The thing is, the guy struggles to putt, but when you dig into his numbers, remembering he won the Sanderson's Farms Championship at the end of last year on Champion Bermuda Grass Greens, he putted ridiculously well that week to win that tournament, and he just spikes on Bermuda Grass with the putter. Interestingly enough, he gained 1.5 strokes last week with the putter after being negative for week after week after week. So Kevin Yu, if he can putt well this week, I think the tee to green game will really come to the fore this week at Memorial Park. So I am on at 75-1 with Bet365, 8 place each way on Kevin Yu.
My last selection is 200-1. Make a quick observation. Sorry, Darren? Just a quick observation about praise versus solidly being on the post-it note of doom. Kevin Yu beat Ben Ann by one stroke last week, and yet he's getting lauded, and poor Ben is getting just smashed down with a, you know, very strong marker onto the post-it note of doom, kind of re-solidifying his place. So just, you know, supporting Ben.
But Ben Ann's been doing this since 2013, 2014.
Yeah, okay.
True. Oh, I know he won at Wentworth before I get all these emails and tweets of abuse. That was his one victory, though. Oh, no, he did win in career last week, didn't he? Last year.
Yep.
My last selection is 200-1. So let's go through your longer shots.
I've got the same one as you. I want to steal your thunder there. The other one I've backed is Nico Echevarria, which I thought the 100-1 with 8 places from Betfred, I thought that was a very fair price for a player who has been regularly popping up on leaderboards. He won the Zozo last year, second at the RSM, second at the Sony Open this year. So he's been, you know, a bit erratic. There's some miscuts in there, but when he performs, he does tend to perform and, you know, get himself right into the mix. He's right in the mix last week. He was co-leading going into Sunday last week. Closed with a 74, so finished down there in Ben and territory in 16th. But that has kept a lid on his price. And the number I liked was second for strokes gained putting last week, given that you've put quite a bit of emphasis on strokes gained putting in your written preview and in this pod this week. So I thought 100-1 with the 8 places was a price worth taking. And as I say, the other one I've backed is your mega long shot, so I won't steal your thunder there.
Barry?
I've a new one that's come to me in terms of name and just digging into finding a bit more about his career, because he popped up on the predictor model into ninth place when I was putting in some variables for this week, and he's 150-1 eight places.
Can I have a guess?
Oh, please do, yeah.
Stephen Fisk.
Oh, you're in so much trouble, Steve. I've backed him, yeah. Why did he not make it in for you? Because here's why he made it in for me.
I'm an idiot.
He is strokes gained. He's 18th off the tee for the season. Now, putting not so great, but we can manage that. Decent enough around the greens. Winner on the Corn Ferry Tour last year in April, so there's a little bit of biorhythm there. From Atlanta, Georgia, so he hopefully should have played a little bit of kind of Houston golf. Texas golf over his career. So, what was the other thing I had him on? I mean, recent results. Sorry, 17th in Mexico. That was the other one. He was fine at
the Cognizant. We like that course comp, don't we?
Yeah, he was fine at the Cognizant. Where are we now? Come on. Where's the results? Sorry, PGA Tour page. Cognizant was fine. He was 4 under, but that was super low and not really the kind of Cognizant we're used to. 4th in Puerto Rico and 28th at the Valspar last week, which is totally fine for a tough golf course. So, yeah, that's what got me onto Stephen Fisk. Why did he not make your cut of players?
I said, because I'm an idiot.
Okay.
I like to back losers.
The 98%.
Great. Yeah, Stephen Fisk. Do you know the stat that really got me with Stephen Fisk? I believe he's number one on the PGA Tour for ball striking. Now, bearing in mind we're at the end of March, that's a pretty damn strong statistic. The PGA Tour, the biggest tour of them all, Stephen Fisk ranks number one for ball striking. 34th for driving distance, all drives, and he's also 50th for driving accuracy. So he's an absolute beast off the tee. He's long and straight. I think Fisk is a great bet. Fantastic DraftKings play this week. Absolutely amazing DraftKings play. I don't know what you're picking him up for. It probably starts with a 6 or a very, it's a low 7.
He's 6th in greens and reg percentage this year as well. 72.2.
Yeah. The only thing that put me off, you know what I'm going to say, it was the putting, but yeah.
Yeah, look what Victor did last week.
I know.
For me, putting is the one that can snap on and off much quicker than any other part of the game. I just think it's a quicker one to find it.
Well, the other thing is, you wouldn't say that the players that have won here, apart from Carlos Ortiz, were great putters anyway. It's just, I think a lot of the time is that good putting is set up by good approach play. Being on the right part of the green with the right putts. All of a sudden, guess what? You start holding putts. You with me?
Yeah, you're not defensive putting. You're not trying to avoid three putting. Yeah.
They go hand in hand, don't they? It's like scrambling. Scrambling isn't just short game, is it? Scrambling's both the chip and the putt.
And where you've left relative to the pin.
That's it. Last one for me, and this is the one that Paul was referencing. We need to move on. I just read on the Greenkeeper sheet this week, the GCSA fact sheet, which came out at the end of last week. I read average fairway widths 30 to 40 yards. And the first player that just jumped into my mind of any player this week, apart from Rory McIlroy, was Aldridge Potgieter. I was incredulous to see 200-1 with William Hill, 8 places each way, on Monday lunchtime. So I'm on. Hits it a mile. A devastating putter. And clearly, we've seen already on the PGA Tour, give him a long golf course with wide fairways, he can be very, very dangerous. He gained 9.165 strokes putting at Vedanta World when he lost in the playoff to Brian Campbell. My only slight reservation is I haven't seen anything from him, including some of the outings that he's done on the DP World Tour and also on the Corn Ferry, I haven't seen a great deal from him on Bermuda grass surfaces. Paspalum was at Vedanta World. We saw Poana, of course, at Torrey Pines when he was in the heat of battle Sunday afternoon. You know, I love those two courses and the correlating form from those with the Finau and all of that malarkey, also with Stefan Jaeger. Potgieter is my Davis Riley bet of the week from last week. What anything to add to that, Paul? What sort of floated your boat on Potgieter?
Yeah, similar, really. I think the raw credential was there, the length and the putting ability. He was second at the Ned Bank at the back end of last year. That was bent grass as well. So to your point about potentially a lack of Bermuda grass experience or results to date, but that is to date. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't played that many tournaments, so these things can come. Three missed cuts on the trot coming into this, and that's why you're getting the price. But he's one of those players that if it just clicks, I think on any given week, it could click. So, yeah, like you, I was quite happy to take a speculative punt on him this week.
Last thing, and I'll shut up, and we'll move on to Indian Open. Across my predictor model that I built, Rory McIlroy 1, Scottie Scheffler 3, Aldridge Potgieter was number 2. That's mad. Mm. Right, Hero Indian Open, Paul, take it away.
Yes, field of 138 here over in Delhi. A mix, as there always is, of DP World Tour regulars and some of the best local talent that India has got to offer. So always an interesting tournament, an interesting course, which we'll get into in a second. Defending champion is Keitat Nakajima, and he has been chalked up as the 16-1 favourite here this week. Matthew Jordan, 22s. Lots of money for Joost Luiten since the market came up yesterday.
What could go wrong?
25-1. I've got to say, I did consider Joost, but I mean, the guy's getting...
Can I say Joost is toast.
He could well be by the time we get through even Thursday, but who knows? He had been a little bit longer, maybe, but he's, as I say, he's well backed. He's probably going to go off as second favourite, which is mad, really. Adrian Sedier, 28-1. Francesco Laporta, 30-1. Then you've got the likes of Jorge Campillo, Romain Langasque, Johannes Veerman around 33-1, 35-1 bar, those players. Very open market this week. Ball Sports have gone 10 places each way, so if you are going for an each way shot, check their market out, check their prices out. 10 places, a fifth of the odds. 8 places, a fifth of the odds options from Bet365 and Betfred this week. Some very strong prices there. I got all of my bets away again with those two bookies, so do check out their extended markets. Now, the course that I alluded to a second ago is the DLF Golf and Country Club in Delhi. 7,416-yard par 72. It's a Gary Player design. 7,400 yards, as I say, but there are a lot of teeing options, so the course can and often does play significantly shorter than that, which is quoted for the tournament. It's an eye-catching course, though. I'm sure we've seen the pictures. Monstrous bunkers on here, lots of elevation changes. Fairly tight fairways in places, but then some wider ones too. Water heavily in play on 6 of the holes. Huge greens, and Bermuda grass has been used throughout from tee to green. So... one of those that, you'll often see the pictures of players standing in front of these absolutely enormous bunkers. And it's a real feast for the eyes, but it's not so much a feast for the players. They've had some real challenges around here over the years playing this course. Now, we've got history going back to SSP Chowrajah's win here back in 2017. And Chowrajah is an interesting one, given the dimensions of the course that I talked about. 7,400 yards. And he's typically the shortest hitter whenever there's a measured golf tournament on that particular week. So for him to manage to plot and navigate round here and win the golf tournament tells you that there's going to be more than one way to actually to win this or to dominate this course. So we've got history going back to 2017, and we've also got a couple of PGTI events and an Asian Tour event that has been hosted here. So if you're checking this week's stats out, they are course stats and from the various tours all marked on there. So do give that a check. It's well worth considering this week because it is quite a nuanced course. Now, the scoring tends to be quite tough here. Chaurasia was 10 under back in 2017. Matt Wallace won the year after, 11 under. Stephen Gallagher was 9 under when he won in 2019. We had a little break around the pandemic. Marcel Siem, 14 under. And then last year, Keita Nakajima won at 17 under. So that was the deepest the scoring has got. I guess when you're digging into the course, it's not that birdies are tough to find here. And Nakajima, I forget the number now, but you know, it was kind of mid-20s, late-20s of birdies that he managed to make over the course of the week. It's not that birdies are tough to find. It's that there are bogeys and doubles, or worse, absolutely everywhere. You can make a double, and most of your players, if your player makes a double this week, don't write him off. It's going to happen to virtually every player. I'd be surprised if there are more than a handful of players in this week's field who do not make a double bogey or worse during the course of the 4 days. So, don't get too downhearted. Take it on the chin. And, players who can do that and move on are going to be the ones to focus on, I think, this week. Now, I suspect we're going to see similar kind of winning score, maybe just into the double figures or thereabouts this week, because the forecast isn't particularly adverse. It's going to be hot and sunny, dry for the 4 days. Temperatures getting up to mid-90s Fahrenheit, so mid kind of 30s centigrade. There is a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind blowing across the course, which might be quite welcome for the players, I guess. Given the heat, but yeah, nothing untoward. I think it will just be the course itself which offers the biggest test this week. Statistically, you need to be finding three quarters of fairways or thereabouts here. Similar kind of number of greens in regulation if you're going to stand a chance of winning. The winners, though, in terms of their putting average in old numbers, have ranked 7th, 3rd, 2nd, 12th and 1st. So you need to have a warm enough putter to be able to perform and contend around here. In terms of strokes gained, we do have some strokes gained data for this, but it's extremely patchy. In some cases, only half the field or thereabouts were actually measured and monitored in years gone past. But the winners ranked 13th in terms of Stephen Gallagher, 4th, Marcel Siem, and 1st, Keita Nakajima in terms of strokes gained putting. So I think you need to focus a bit on putting this week. You need to be able to make the birdies, because the bogey is going to come. Yeah, you need to be able to make enough birdies to offset that if you're going to win this golf tournament, I think. If you dig deeper into some of the other players who did have measured strokes gained data, then the other metric that stands out is strokes gained tee to green. That's the strongest of the long game statistics, I think. So if you're going to focus on a couple of stats this week, tee to green and certainly putting, I think. Other than that, in terms of current form and course form, it's a real mixed bag, actually. Keita Nakajima was a debutant when he won this last year. He'd finished 4th at Ras Al Khaimah earlier in the season, but not much since then. 29th on his last start. CM was 17th on both of his last two outings, without any real course form, 29th and missed cut from his two efforts here. Stephen Gallagher had finished 7th here prior to his win, but came into this off the back of 4 straight missed cuts, so wasn't showing much whatsoever. So yeah, how much credence you put into the current and course form combination this week, totally up to you, but I wouldn't get too bogged down on it. I mean, ultimately we need a player who can deal with the course, and when they make a bogey, when they make a double, I've got the mentality to go and shrug that off and move on. Easier said than done, of course. Anyway, back 4 this week. There are around 20 players or so at 40 to 1 or shorter. It's a really open market, as I said at the top. And I can see why Nakajima's favourite. He's defending. He was 2nd last week, and I'm sure at 16 to 1 he will be popular, but my preference is to dig a little bit deeper. I backed a couple around the 35 to 1. John Parry I've backed. A bit of a career resurgence, well, very much a career resurgence for Parry of late. He won the Vivendi Cup way back in 2010 and then really quiet until last year when he won three times on the Challenge Tour. One of them was in India. And then finished second at Leopard Creek. That's another Gary Player design. And then won in Mauritius. So a real career turnaround. Runner-up in Kenya earlier this year in 2025. So playing some nice stuff. Up to third in the race to Dubai as it stands. So he's very much in the hunt for one of those PGA Tour cards. Doesn't have a great record here, but he's a very different player nowadays to when he was recording his kind of mid-divisional 50th place finishes here over the last few years. Fifth for strokes gained tee to green for the season, sixth for bogey avoidance are the stats that I particularly like about John Parry. So quite happy to back him here this week at 35-1 with eight places. Similar price point. I've also backed Jaden Shaper, again 35-1. Like your Aaron Rye pick, Steve, he was one of these guys that just absolutely kept popping up on my analysis, and in the end you've either got to embrace it or find a valid reason not to back them, and there was no valid reason. He was second on my output of my predictor model, just kept on every stat I was looking at, he was there. So I mean, the only thing with Jaden Shaper is he's still a DP World Tour maiden, and you know that may put some people off backing him, I guess. But then Keita Nakajima was a maiden heading into this last year and won the tournament. He missed the cut last week in Singapore, but before that, fifth in Qatar, fourth in Kenya, 16th in Durban, ninth at the Joburg Open as well. 13th here on debut back in 2023, where he really got the dimensions of the course. Seventh for strokes gained approach, third for strokes gained tee to green. And he's also got a great record on Gary Player tracks in general. Two top tens at Leopard Creek. He's got another couple of top tens at Blair Athol as well. So Jaden Shaper could be the one to break his maiden here this week. A little bit further down, I've backed Martin Kuvra. 70-1 with eight places. You can get 80s out there if you're going to take the bog standard terms. I backed Kuvra a few weeks back and he didn't do a great deal, but I think there's enough to like with this guy. He graduated from the Challenge Tour last year, looks a decent prospect. Seventh at Leopard Creek before Christmas, again, as I say, another Gary Player design. Fourth in Bahrain, fifth in Qatar, 14th last week in Singapore, where he was fourth for strokes gained approach. Now that puts him 10th for strokes gained approach for the season, 19th strokes gained tee to green for the season, 20th for bogey avoidance. So again, some of these key metrics that I'm looking to find this week about a player. And Kuvra ticks a number of boxes. Course debutant, but he's got the tools to compete here, I think. Fifth in India on the Challenge Tour last year. So some localish form as well for Kuvra. And the final one, Benjamin Hebert, I've backed. 125-1 with eight places. Again, you can get up to 150s if you want to take fewer each way places. But I've placed, or I've backed him with eight places just to give myself a chance again in the return here. Now, with Stephen Gallagher, Marcel Siem, there's a couple of more experienced players there who it'd been a long barren spell before they managed to win on this course over the last few years. And if you look at Hebert, all six of his wins on the Challenge Tour came between 2011 and 2014. So it's been an awful long time between drinks for the Frenchman. Interesting though, the first of those wins came at minus 12 when he won by four strokes. The last of those wins came again at 12 under, where he won by five strokes. So two kind of stretching, difficult tests, not dissimilar kind of winning score to what I'm expecting here this week. And he dominated both of those events back in the day. He's come close since. Three times a playoff loser at DP World Tour level. He also lost in the final of the 2018 Belgian knockout. So has come close to winning, just hasn't quite managed to get over the line as yet. But coming into this with some form, top 20s in Qatar and Kenya, putting nicely as well. He kept popping up on my putting statistics as I was working through the data for this. So I think he could feature at a nice three-digit price this week. So that's Hebert, Kuvra, Jaden Shaper and John Parry for me. Barry, are you having a play with this tournament this week?
couple of little punts. Yeah, so I'm going with Jong Weon Ko, 20th last week, 17th and a 5th here at this event. So, and I haven't placed a bet yet, but you have him on your odds list here, 50-1. So if I can get anything close to that with 27 places, that'd just be fantastic. And then the last one, I said I'd go really deep. I have a look at the Challenge Tour a couple of weeks ago in India as well. And I'm going to go with a Indian player as well. So Om Prakash Chuhan, who was T2 only 2 weeks ago. And he also has finished 4th and 22nd here at this course. So it is a complete hit or bust, because there's a lot of miscuts in there as well. You have him at 400-1. I'm going to have to see what I can find him at again. An odds checker fires up here.
Yeah, this you can imagine, or you'd expect one or two of the local players to feature, and if they do, it's likely to be a name that you may not have heard of, or certainly haven't watched a great deal of. But I couldn't put you off taking a speculative punt. There's been a lot of money for Jong Weon Ko as well. So popular pick this week.
What, there was a couple of others where they just popped on a model. Marcus Armitage and Dan Houtsing.
Yeah, I was close on the bullet. Of the mid prices that I could have backed if I was going to six or seven players this week, but I kept it tight with four. Marcus Armitage, he's finished 2nd and 5th recently and been getting off to some fast starts. The other one was Pablo Larrazabal, who I backed last week and has a decent record.
You know what happens, Paul, with Pablo, don't you? Yeah. You know he's going to win.
Did you not back him again this week?
I've left him alone.
What are you doing?
I've left him alone.
Paul, you never learn from your errors.
Steve, well, I know who to back now.
So do I. I think one of my tips is Pablo Larrazabal. He's 80-1 with Ladbrokes.
Bingo.
The reason why is because Paul's been backing him, he's been missing cuts, then he pops up and wins. That's my reason.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that's an incredibly valid reason to back him, I think. I've freed him up for you guys to secure and snare an 80-1 winner.
I've gone for another Spaniard, Nacho Elvira. He's been absolutely lights out from tee to green recently.
Yep.
6th in Kenya when he was 11th. 3rd in Singapore last week where he was 20th. He was 6th here way back on his last outing in 2019. So Nacho Elvira, 2-time DP World Tour winner, so he can get over the line. So that's Larrazabal Elvira, and I cannot resist. I just love this guy. I think he's my favourite DP World Tour player, proper hardcore DP World Tour player. Marcel CM. How can you not like him? 9th and 14th on his last two outings. Doing what Marcel does, absolutely disgraceful from tee to green, putting lights out. That can actually work here.
Yeah.
So I am on at... I don't know who I'm going to back him with, because I haven't backed him yet. It'll either be Bet365 or Betfred. Depends what app I open up on my mobile post-recording first. But they're both 50-1. On Marcel CM. So CM, I've got Elvira. And just purely for the Paul hasn't backed him this week, and this is when he wins, Pablo Larrazabal. Are we done?
That's it.
Yeah. Are you making me fear now that Larrazabal's going to win?
Just for a little fiver, Paul. Like,
we've been recording this podcast for lots of years, Paul, and the same thing happens with Pablo. You're never on him. And it's always just after you've been backing.
I know. Closed with 3 birdies on the trot last week as well when he missed the cut.
Oh, my God.
As you know with Pablo, you'll know very early what's happening. It's either ejection or contention. I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best of luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to listeners. We will be back next week, the preceding week to the Masters. Only one event, PGA Tour, the Valero Texas Open. It's the Corey Connors Open next week. I hope your bets go well. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the Golf Betting System, the Golf Betting System.